Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Thanks for being here. Appreciate you showing up. It is a beautiful Sunday morning. The sun is hitting all the freshly grown grass and the new leaves on all the trees. Everything is so vibrant when I woke up that I began thinking about all of the growth and transformation that happens in every single facet of existence on this planet. There's big macrocosms of environments and solar systems and galaxies. And then we have a microcosm that mirrors the outer systems inside our own. A multifaceted being, and all those pieces needing separate attention, separate intention, and growth. And I believe as we get older and wiser, and we start to become something that we desire, the Ubermensch, the overmind, the ideal, the project, I feel that ebb and flow and tension between all the different parts of the systems begin to become more natural and less divisive. When I was a lot more stressed earlier this week, because stress itself is this tide of emotions that we have to embark upon. And emotionality is much like the weather. And just like today, I woke up to a lot of sun and just a lot of prettiness and vitality. Yesterday morning was quite drab. There was a lot of cloud cover and rain and lightning. Not that there's anything wrong with the clouds and the murk. My state of Colorado has been very dry, quite dry, for the last couple of years. There's been a lot of fires throughout the west of the United States. I'm sure there's still a fire going on now, even though there's a lot of water. But my state was literally on fire just a couple years ago, and I think it was called the Waldo Canyon Fire. And I remember walking around, and I was in high school still, so quite a while ago, where me and my friends had gas masks on because you could not literally see across the street. There was so much smoke in the air, a consequence of some sort of broader change in bigger systems, perhaps, in climate. I've seen so much difference in weather patterns since I was younger, because even if we can grow used to a pattern in weather and have expectations for what's supposed to happen in weather or emotionality, there could still become change. And yet again, within these broader systems, every single participant in the system is helping make some sort of change. You know, so the planet as a whole is growing towards something, and we're part of it. We might not be the only mover, but we for sure might be a pinnacle mover. So it can depend on how you wake up into a different set of feeling. And with every brand new day, we have an immense diversity of occurrences and happenings, of things approaching that we will surmount. And it's really hard to even guess what those are going to be. That's why I like this weather analogy. It's been raining a lot here, which makes me feel so happy. I feel in my soul, in my stomach, in my heart, the very center, that this is exactly what the land needed here. And everything is so lush. It's gorgeous. I've never seen it this green. But it had me thinking again about me during the winter here, when everything was a lot drier. You know, we didn't have as much snow as I would expect. And I had been looking forward so much to the summer and the spring, because I had discovered this new joy in walking around and hiking. And I was thinking about this last night and how comical it is and how little I've been able to hike. Perhaps today we'll go outside, but I bet you in a couple hours Colorado's going to start raining again, you know? I bet you if I were to look on the weather, there's going to be thunder in the afternoon. Maybe not. But there's just been so much more than I could have ever expected. And even though I wanted to spend my time outside, I've been given its opposite. And even though it's not exactly what I wanted, it's the best that I could have ever had. This will benefit everybody. And I was thinking about this analogy with weather and how it connects to our own feelings within our own days. We can set up these ideas in the future to look forward to, which I think is a very valuable exercise to implement. We have to have things to look forward to, and fortunately most of mine have been chemical. You know, I love coming home to smoke pot. I love smoking pot on the weekends. But I also love being able to go travel, you know, and so I want to set up a plan with me and Odin to go out to the Alamosa sand dunes. And I don't know if you knew that the United States hosts a couple patches of sand dunes, nothing like the Sahara, but Google Colorado sand dunes and I think you'll be thrilled. Some of these are hundreds of feet tall. Sand dunes are formed primarily from the erosion of water or wind hitting the slopes of some sort of mountainside and being carried down by water or wind into depressions in the land. And just like water can fill the low spots in a terrain, sand can do the same. And sand dunes move slowly, but they behave in a similar yet different way to the aqualine properties of most of our freshwater and saltwater sources. And I've always been just so attracted to the idea of the Sahara and the deserts. And all of my readings and adventure novels and watching movies such as Sahara with Matthew McConaughey, or, you know, the grave robbing and forest environments of Indiana Jones, like the idea of adventure and being somewhere so different like that, you know. And not every desert's full of sand, but I want to go take him to go to that place sometime in the next couple weeks, I decided recently. And I want to make a weekend out of it where we can go and get a hotel and just go do a little trip. And when I thought about the adventure of that, I felt a tingle in my stomach swirl up like a flame of excitement. And that little bit is going to give me something to look forward to, you see? But once we get there, the ideal will always fall apart, and who knows how the trip may go. And when we put our expectations on such a pedestal and we decide how something is going to happen, we put ourselves in confrontation with reality at this point, and we can have the tendency to want to force the situation to happen. But emotionality, planning, all the things that we do in our lives are like weather. And maybe the thing that we need next is slightly different than what we wanted. So, how could the upcoming time frame affect our transformational processes and what we're trying to do? How can we be open-minded to be able to accept the torrents of rain, the nature, or earth, or the universe, or God, or whatever frame of the infinite and the connectivity of our environment that we are intrinsically part of and our connections to it? How can we listen to those things and be able to accept the new patterns of weather inside of us that are approaching? How about now we shift to a different setting? When we actively confront a new pattern, a new happening in life, a new downpour of some feeling or necessary activity. This requires doing. It requires us to put ourselves into the independent provocateur. We're now a piece on a board making machinations. Within, embedded, but perhaps outside of this activity, is meaning and how we derive the impact of this happening upon our observational force, which doesn't necessarily have to be our personality's force. So let's break that down a little bit so I can try to make myself just a little bit more clear. Hopefully you can hear me. Sensibility is our ability to feel sensation. And then the mind takes sensation, it crunches it, it computes, and then we have a composite within us that is a model based on the outside. And I would say that every single being has a degree of sensibility and sensitivity to its world. And so every single creature, depending on its organism and based on its collective equipment, is going to sense the world from a very different and unique viewpoint. And all these composite viewpoints are based inside. So, our sensed environment that we experience is a very personal experience. And what I'm the most curious about and what I'm obsessed with in my own ruminations and wanderings through my own life is how I make meaning in this world. Because the weather patterns and my being going through it are all inconsequential to my experience and how I make it, the way that I see our part to play in all this, our computing ability and all of the crunching and all the analysis and all the making of our worlds inside our heads, you know, it's a very intimate process with the outside. And I think they're completely the same entity, experience, and the outside world. But somehow, because of this collection, because we have to walk up the hill and we have to collect the water from the well, because we have to tap some sort of input and output, or at least this implied position of input and output, this creates this abstraction that I think is part of the withdrawal from existence that happens in some hard to deal with emotional weather patterns that we find ourselves in, or at least our reactions to them, right? Earlier last week, my son had difficulty in his YMCA program. There are a lot of younger people, and they don't have the training that his SPED team has at his school. And his IEP does not apply in childcare settings. So he doesn't have a lot of the resources that he's used to and the support that he needs. So he struggles during these summer time periods because of the weird programs that I have to throw him into, these institutional settings, so that I can work and support us. And so last Tuesday, you know, I had, honestly, a really good day at work. I felt good mentally. I felt like I'd done good work. I felt good. And when I arrived at his program, after I signed him out and I did all the things I needed to do, his teacher, supervisor, caretaker person, you know, came up to me and gave me two sheets of paper showing that he had had two sit-down talks and had to be removed from the group. And they're like, I've had so many of these pieces of paper. I know you probably remember them from school. I remember them being like really small, like postcards in different colors. At least the school I went to, they were color-coded. So when you get, you know, to like red, you're in a lot of trouble, right? And I remember getting those because I had, you know, struggles with authority and being able to sublimate my own wishes when I was younger too. And so, but as a parent, I'm so sick of signing these goddamn things because it's just, I've signed hundreds and hundreds of these little forms. Ugh. And so as soon as he hands these to me, my heart rate starts to rise, and I felt it. And then he said that one really hard thing to hear, you know, one more time he's going to be suspended, we're going to have a conversation. And I was just like, fuck. And so I got just tanked immediately. Within like 2 or 3 minutes, clouds covered the sun, and I just lost my mind. I completely lost all control over my machinizing. And because I wasn't smart, and because I didn't seek shelter, and I didn't try to wrangle my exposure to this biological system that was now set in place. Because we find these hard situations, and if we form trauma to these situations in some way or the other, we form an instinctual response to it. So say, you know, you were, you know, in a bad relationship with some other gender, that could affect your feelings towards that gender now. And some people can become very, they're like triggered easily. And so this is what happened. I'm triggered by the situation because immediately my mind goes through all the different things that are going to happen if he gets suspended, even though it hasn't happened yet. But the fear monster and the fear dogs are let out, and they start to bark, and all of a sudden these things touch other parts inside of me, and it's like this wildfire that starts to rush, you know. And this is my meaning system making my narrative in the moment, making my story internally. This wasn't my story. This is the story I made in my head that had nothing to do with even what was going to happen. Because Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the whole rest of the week, he did great. But in that moment on Tuesday, I lost my mind for a little bit. And I was quiet, and then, you know, I got loud and I yelled on the way back, and I regretted that. I regretted how I handled the situation with my son. I regretted how I handled myself because I burned myself really bad. And I've had a lot of internal burns that I've been healing from just because of my emotional outburst. that yet again was an internal narrative I made, a story I wrote to myself, based upon a weather pattern that was going to happen. And now, perhaps I've seeded the clouds in my son's mind with more weather patterns. And my biggest concern is how I can help him navigate himself now. We're all so intrinsically connected to each other, especially in these parental systems with children. You know, he sees my reaction, and now his meaning system is going to be affected by mine. He is going to have some of my hardships and my feelings, because I've downloaded them into his being in a way by modeling them to him. And this is an immense responsibility as a parent. But in a positive outlook, in a glass half full way to see things, I'm learning through this, and I'm growing through this, and I could speak about it out loud, publicly, to all of you, because I'm ready to change this. You see? And that's growth. So me and a friend of mine were sitting around on my couch yesterday, and he's been having a lot of difficulty getting off on hallucinogens, which is one of those topics I've talked about for the last couple of weeks that has been one of my koans, my conundrums that I want to figure. And we're sitting there, and we're talking about ego death, and he's like, you know, I think part of the reason I haven't been able to get where I want more, and I just tried to keep pushing him a little bit, because this is one of those moments where I'm confused as to what the more is. And so one of the things I said to him was like, you know, I'm not trying to invalidate your wanting more. I was just trying to promote the fact that I find value in every single level of magnitude and dosage with this chemical, with DMT, that is what we're specifically talking about. Like every dosage that I've gotten of DMT, that each bit has been valuable in its own way, you know? And so it's not like there's this arrival point, like that, this huge breakthrough. I don't think everybody needs that. I don't think it's good for everybody, you know? And I think it can be traumatic, especially, and I think it just happens on its own time, you know? And so, like, I was pushing him about what this concept of ego death even was. And one of the things I said to him was like, I think that, you know, difficult circumstances and difficult headspaces, mishandling of information sometimes, bad storytelling, you know, I think those can be ego death experiences. And I said, true ego death is when that part of the personality, that part of the ego actually dies, you know? I was like, sure, I've temporarily lost sections of my personality under chemical circumstances sometimes. And he's like, oh yeah, well, that is not what I'm talking about when you call that ego death. And I was like, maybe, but inevitably, each and every one of these occasions, I always came back. No matter how far away I lost my personality, no matter how high I got, you know, especially on DMT with its short flow, you always come back. Is it a true ego death if you're resurrected? You know? So what I told him was, I'm really intrigued by true transformation. And I think that that can happen and be facilitated by things like struggle, opportunity, and psychedelia, chemical. A lot of the reports around right now surrounding psychedelia and serotonergic chemicals shows this window of neuroplasticity. Neuroplasticity is the brain's ability and knack to mold itself and grow in different directions. Like, there's this guy who had a railroad track put through his head and he lost half his brain, and he was definitely never the same again, but he learned how to talk again because the brain was able to remodulate and reuse what he had left. And that could be very severe, and it doesn't mean that you will ever be the same personality-wise again, but, you know, your vessel is still going. So neuroplasticity is the ability for the brain to regrow, redesign, remodulate, reassociate, maybe. And so there's some evidence showing that these chemicals can increase the ability of the brain to be in this neuroplastic state, you know, which could be helpful for people in dementia, delirium, and people who have long patterns of emotional distress that can deplete the brain's capacity. It can literally make your brain shrink. Like depression, anxiety, and stress hormones like cortisol can physically maim you. We can maim ourselves through bad storytelling. And so neuroplasticity is this idea, this theory. It's theoretical. I'm not going to say anything is on paper like real. This is it. Now, there is no panacopoeia or cure-all for anything in life. It's always this composite, holistic approach that we have to do. Yet, it seems to be that people with resistant depressions who approach psychedelia can change their minds. But within neuroplasticity, you can also expose yourself to more bad storytelling. So if somebody's in this very soft state from psychedelia, they can also put themselves into bad patterns and bad states. Because this idea of moldability doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to immediately mold yourself for the better. These chemicals don't make you just better. They just make you more flexible. And so if you're more flexible, you can also bend the wrong way. And so that's kind of what I was trying to tell him, was like, on this one toe, you do have this chemical that can increase and give you the opportunity. But I was also, and then I pointed at my book and I was like, but I also have all these woohoo bullshit spiritualism stuff that I'm working with, making my meaning system. So there's a lot of other work on top of the chemical state of mind. I was like, it's not like you just take a chemical and you get this response. If you want transformation and true ego death, it becomes the necessity to think about what you're making yourself. You have to write the story. It's not just about being stoned. And so that's why I'm not convinced that these super high breakthrough doses are exactly what everybody needs, especially when it comes to the idea that this neuroplastic window might be open for an extended time period long after the chemical or drug has left the body. So even when you're not high anymore, in this integration period, when one has sobered up and has rationalized their experience, perhaps that might be even more important than the chemical itself. Well, anyways, that's my rant on a couple things today. So thank you so much for being here with me. I can't tell you how much I really respect this opportunity you've given me. I love doing this, and I love you, and I'm glad that you woke up this morning, and I'm glad that you are writing your story today. You're amazing, and you're full of meaning. So thank you for being here. All right, I'm gonna go grab a book. All right, I'm gonna be reading from my copy of the Dhammapada, translated by Ekanathias Warren. This is chapters 3 and maybe 4. I've decided how far I'm going to go. As an archer aims an arrow, the wise aim their restless thoughts. Hard to aim, hard to restrain. As a fish hooked and left on the sand thrashes about in agony, the mind being trained in meditation trembles all over, desperate to escape the hand of Mara. Hard it is to train the mind, which goes where it likes and does what it wants, but a trained mind brings health and happiness. The wise can direct their thoughts, subtle and elusive, wherever they choose. A trained mind brings health and happiness. Those who can direct thoughts which are unsubstantial and wander so aimlessly are freed from the bonds of Mara. They are not wise whose thoughts are not steady, the minds not serene, who do not know Dharma. The wise whose thoughts are steady and minds serene, unaffected by good and bad, they are awake and free from fear. Remember, this body is like a fragile clay pot. Make your mind a fortress and conquer Mara with the weapon of wisdom. Guard your conquest always. Remember that this body will soon lie in the earth without life, without value, useless as a burned log. More than those who hate you, more than all your enemies, an undisciplined mind does the greatest harm. More than your mother, more than your father, more than all your family, a well-disciplined mind does greater good. Chapter 4. Flowers. As a garland maker chooses the right flowers, choose the well-taught path of Dharma and go beyond the realms of death and of the gods. As a garland maker chooses the right flowers, those who choose the well-taught path of Dharma will go beyond the realms of death and the gods. Remember that this body is like froth, the nature of mirage. Break the flower-tipped arrows of Mara. Never again will death touch you. As a flood sweeps away a slumbering village, death sweeps away those who spend their lives gathering flowers. Death sweeps them away while they are still gathering, caught in the pursuit of pleasure. But the wise live without injuring nature, as the bee drinks nectar without harming the flowers. Do not give your attention to what others do or fail to do. Give it to what you do or fail to do. Like a lovely flower full of color but lacking in fragrance are the words of those who do not practice what they preach. Like a lovely flower full of color and fragrance are the words of those who practice what they preach. Many garlands can be made from a heap of flowers. Many good deeds can be done in this life. The scent of flowers or sandalwood cannot travel against the wind, but the fragrance of the good spreads everywhere. Neither sandalwood nor the tagara flower, neither lotus nor jasmine, can come near the fragrance of the good. Faint is the scent of sandalwood or the tagara, but the fragrance of the good rises high to reach the gods. Mara can never come near those who are good, earnest, and enlightened. A true follower of the Buddha shines among the blind mortals as the fragrant lotus, growing in the garbage by the roadside, and it brings joy to all who pass by. So, the Dhammapada, or the words of the Buddha, it's a very short collection of sayings. It's, I think it's 400 verses. It could be read in maybe an hour. Very esoteric, very deep. Still one of my favorite books of old wisdom. And there's a lot there. So I hope that gives you something to ruminate on. I'm going to go get O.
Hello, it's me, Asko, again.
Whoa.
So, how you guys been doing? I bet you've been saying good, but... So, how's your summer?
Do you like summer?
Yeah.
How's the YMCA?
Good. Let's just say good.
Yeah?
Uh-huh.
You're doing good.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
So.
Are you looking forward to school?
Yeah.
You want to go back to school?
Soon.
Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you something?
What?
So, I have a special field trip with my papa.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
We're going to go to a pool.
Oh. That's exciting.
But
that's something really good to look forward to, huh?
Yeah, but I think I'm gonna be done for the day.
Oh. Okay.
Okay, but at least we've been doing pretty good.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.